At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
ugh, I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew. Or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com today for limited time offers.
Hey there, listeners. Just a heads up, this episode might dive into some heavy stuff like rape, sexual assault, suicide, violence, or drugs. We want you to know that these are tough topics and it's totally okay to skip this one if you're not up for it. Remember, we're not experts, we're just here to share stories and start conversations. If you or someone you know needs help, reach out to a professional or call a helpline. Take care of yourselves and each other. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show.
The only difference between a panic attack and an orgasm is your mindset.
Really? Can you go more into that? Wait, because the difference of both, and yeah, I'm curious.
Yeah.
I'm very intrigued right now.
Well, in both of those examples we're talking about, we are talking about sympathetic nervous system arousal. So
yeah,
our sympathetic and parasympathetic, I'm sure you know about that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a seesaw that it's not like it's going to, they can't both be up. It's a seesaw. Only one is up and the other one is down.
Mm-hmm.
When we're excited about a game or a shopping spree or something great that happened, that is sympathetic nervous system arousal. When you get off of a roller coaster, your pupils are dilated, your palms are sweaty, your heart is beating, just like if you just got off of a stage and giving a big speech. But it's all about the mindset.
Welcome to Mentally a Badass, the podcast where we get real about mental health, mixing in some humor with honest conversation. I'm your host, Justine Rhodes, and whether we're laughing through the craziness or getting deep into the tough stuff, you're never in it alone. Every week, we hear from people across all walks of life, bringing their stories, wisdom, and a reminder that being a badass means embracing every part of the journey, the highs, the lows, and everything in between. Let's get into it. Hello, hello, Sarah. Welcome to the Mentally a Badass podcast. I'm so happy to have you today.
Thank you.
We're going to have such a fun conversation. We're going to get into your survivor story because that is very important. And for people who are listening, I just want to make sure, you know, no one ever feels alone. So I'm glad that you're taking your time to come on here and share your story. I know that can be very hard for some people. And then I'm excited for us to, you know, get into like what you do with the meditation and such. So before we get into like all of your wisdom, I want to first have my audience get to know you better. Typically, Mentally a Badass, we kind of like just first get into, you know, who you are. So I would like to go back to first your survivor story, because that's pretty much roots back to like everything that you do today. So whenever you're comfortable sharing with, I would love to like get into that.
Thank you for having me, Justine. I feel like I should probably give a trigger warning.
There will be in the beginning. I have a pre-recorded. No worries.
All right. So when I was 28 years old, I was gang raped by not a gang, but 8 men. And they pretty much left me for dead, propped me up outside of the hotel where they procured me. I was on vacation with my family and we left the very next morning to go back home. I was in Florida. Actually, and now I live in a very different part of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I did not deal with it. I could not deal with it mentally. I didn't go to the police. I certainly didn't tell my parents. I did tell my sister, and she really encouraged me to go to the police. But the way that I coped with it was to drink, to drink more, and to not really look at it. And I know this is a weird thing to say, but I'm really grateful for the trauma that I've experienced. You know, smooth seas don't make for strong sailors. This is how we learn and grow and get better. And also my story can help inspire others to do their own work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel the exact same way. Like, I never like to tell people like your trauma. I don't like never want to say, oh yeah, your trauma is like great that happened because of this. Like I never ever want to, you know, ever say that. And I think that's what you were getting to as well. But whatever like happens to us, even if it's like something so like tragic, we're gonna get into like your whole like transformation. You're doing wonderful things in your current day to day. Before we get into, I do kind of like to want to ask about, if you don't mind, the night that did happen to you with the whole, you know, gang rape. I'm so sorry that happened to you. I was like listening to that. I'm like, I can't even imagine going through something like that. So the fact that, you know, you're still here today, you got through, you know, when you were coping with drinking with alcohol. When that happened, first of all, I want to know, did any of those guys get arrested? Or they just kind of like...
Not from my incident, no. Full disclosure, they did give me some sort of a Rohypnol, or I don't know what it was, but I had traces of memories and had really like not drank enough to be knocked out like that. I do know that it was like over the back of a Jeep. Like the Jeep was open, and mm-hmm. I did have, you know, some traces of memories from that. This is a graphic thing, but it was holes, mm-hmm. and they really beat me up. I don't know if it was because I fell or they were like passing me around or what, but I was pretty bruised mm-hmm. in every way. And I'm really just grateful that I'm alive.
Yeah.
And that they did do the courtesy of bringing me back to the place where we were originally. And yeah, this one gentleman, we'll call mm-hmm. him, had said, oh, let's go meet up with some of my friends. And I did not know that all of the friends were going to be men or like young boys. Mm-hmm. And the first thing they did was give me a shot. And I remember like the look on their faces as they were like, are you sure this is the right one? Mm-hmm. That was the last thing I remember is that moment. Yeah, it was definitely not something that my 28-year-old brain knew how to handle or cope with. And I was afraid that I would be blamed.
Yeah, that's like the first thought for like women. It's like, oh, was it my fault? Like, am I like the reason? It's kind of crazy how like that's the first thought. Like, how did that happen? I mean, that's just, I guess, just generational in society, always blaming the woman for everything.
Right. And I wasn't dressed in a provocative way. I literally had on a swimsuit and a cover-up that was a total cover-up. It wasn't see-through or anything like that. I mean, this was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I'm almost 44 years old. So we're talking 16 years ago. And I didn't know, you know, that what I could do. I didn't know that I could go to the police and get a rape kit. I really completely dissociated.
Yeah.
Which is what our subconscious mind does so well. If we mm-hmm. don't have the resources to deal with something, we shove it down. We put it away until we can. And thank goodness, because otherwise I don't know how I would have made it through the next decade and a half of my life. Mm-hmm. When I started meditating, it was this quiet little knock at the door when I would get quiet. And when I was not drinking, I knew that there was some underlying trauma that I had not dealt with. And full disclosure, it wasn't the first time. Somebody very close to the family in my home growing up sexually abused me from a very young age. And I also repressed that. Mm-hmm. So really, I was already drinking to cope with that, which seems a little counterintuitive, that because we as trauma survivors feel like we need to control things. Some people respond or react by overeating or overexercising. Some people respond by trying to forget. And so you never can tell what modes of coping mechanisms people are going to cycle through, but it does change over time as well.
Yeah. And for some people, it can be self-harm. I've spoken to people where they've been sexually abused when they were like a child, and it turned to self-harm because they ended up feeling like worthless and they hate themselves, even though like that's not their fault. Right. When you were going through those dark moments of drinking and coping, when was the turning point of when you're like, I don't want to like feel like I have to cope with alcohol anymore, and I want to go to I want to start my healing journey?
Well, interestingly, the first time that I got sober was the day that I found out I was pregnant with my daughter.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't going to drink because I knew I had a precious child inside of me, and I was very newly pregnant. And I was sober for that entire pregnancy and thereafter. And then after I was allowed to drink again, I started drinking again. And it was really my daughter again, who allowed me to recognize the gravity of what I was doing. When she was about 18 months old, she picked up this little toy cup when we were over at a party at someone's house, and she took a sip and she said, this my wine. Because I was a wino. I would drink wine. I wasn't like a hard liquor or beer kind of person. Do you not drink anymore?
Oh, sorry. Once in a while, I like drink wine. I'm not. There was a moment where I didn't realize I was drinking like almost a bottle a night, but that was during the pandemic, and I was in a very dark time with my 9-to-5. But that's like a whole other story. We're not gonna get into that. But right now, it's just here and there a bottle of wine, or when I go out with like friends, like nothing too crazy. But I'm more of a wine person.
Yes. So it was that moment that I heard my daughter say that I really started to read literature and started to change my relationship with alcohol, because what we know is that our subconscious mind really runs the show. Mm-hmm. It's these subconscious patterns that are keeping us safe, seemingly, even though drinking alcohol consistently every night is not safe.
Yeah, it doesn't know better. That's the thing. You can't tell the difference.
Subconscious mind you're talking about? Yep.
Yeah, subconscious mind, all it feels is like, okay, it's trying to protect you from like those negative emotions. It's trying to like block it out. So like alcohol seems to be like a, you know, it's a drug that does do that, but it can't tell the difference between something that's good for you and something that's really just like hurting you, you know, your body and such.
Yeah, it works until it doesn't, right?
Yeah.
It works until it doesn't. And then when we start to have negative repercussions from the alcohol, like my daughter picking up that little chalice,
yeah,
then we start to try to change our relationship. And it did take me some time to finally kick it for good. But I'm 5.5, almost 6 years sober today. And my life is so much better because of it. At first, I kind of missed it. It was like I didn't really want to drink, but I just didn't want to be the outsider saying, okay, Oh, no, thank you. It's interesting because in these past 5 years, or I don't know if it's just what I'm paying attention to, it seems like there are more people who are just choosing not to drink for health reasons, and a lot more non-alcoholic beer, non-alcoholic wine. And personally, I don't partake in any of those because I don't want to pretend. I don't like the taste. I drink it for the effect. Yeah, I don't. I don't try to go. I can go to a bar and just say no thank you. But yeah, I don't hang out at bars either.
Yeah, I'm not really a person that would just like go. I mean, maybe like old college just eat. Actually, no, I'd never. Okay. Maybe like once I like went to Disney Springs and like I brought a book with me and had like one. I just want to feel sophisticated, I guess. Or kind of have like that moment where it's like I don't need to like always go out with people, you know, just like being okay with just being by myself. So it was kind of like something like that. But what I want to ask you, and you do live in Florida, so you may have heard about it. Are you familiar with Cava and Kratom?
Yes.
What's your opinion on that?
I don't like them. I don't drink them.
Yeah. I was just wondering because I know people who were alcoholics or struggle with that, they would go to doing Cava and Kratom instead.
Yeah, I do too. It's definitely a replacement. Yeah. There's a lot of those here in Florida for sure.
Yeah. So let's get into something that you are fantastic on. I want to go in deep into it because you are the pro. Let's talk about meditation, because when you were saying that you are sober and you feel great, you don't feel like a need that you need to drink alcohol to feel okay. I am familiar with meditation. I try my best to keep up with it as much as I can. So when did you decide that you wanted to get into meditation?
I had tried many different kinds of meditation before I finally found the first kind that worked for me consistently. I had been a yogi, being in yoga studios since I was 19. I had done some Deepak Chopra courses. I don't know why I can't say his name today. So yeah, I had done some Deepak Chopra courses and had attended live meditations at studios and other events. But it wasn't until 2016, when I was pregnant with my daughter, that I found mantra meditation. And that really resonated with me. And that allowed me to build the habit of meditating twice a day. Today, I participate in a lot of different kinds of meditation, not just mantra meditation. My favorite kind is breathwork. So the kind of meditation that I learned initially was just mental mantra meditation. Now I do some mantra meditation that's actually produced with the vocal cords. You could call that chanting, if you will. But the science behind it is really fascinating, because when we repeat over and over again with eyes closed, it gives the mind a little something to do, kind of like breathwork does for us, or a guided meditation does a similar thing. It gives the mind a little something to do so that the conscious mind can relax. So we're giving ourselves something so that we can actually go into that parasympathetic state. And my favorite kind of meditation is breathwork. And I don't need to use marijuana or drink any other substances because I get high off my own supply. It's called your breath. It's called oxygen. When we do very specific types of breathing, it can produce amazingly relaxed states. It can also produce really amazing ecstatic states depending on the type of breathing, the length of the inhale, the length of the exhale, the cadence, the location, the visualization along with it. And so that's really my jam is that kind of meditation. But the meditation that I primarily teach clients is to give them the tools themselves, whether that be some sort of a focus mentally, a body awareness, because a lot of people go through life and they're not really aware of what's happening inside of their bodies. They're very detached. I love to say that this ED world gives us lots of opportunities to participate in the 3Ds, which are deny, distract, dissociate. And that's exactly what I did when I was post-trauma after my rape. I just dissociated.
Yeah.
Most people in their daily lives are going to deny that something is a problem, like drinking. They're going to distract from the issue with their partner and talk about some other issue, right? They're actually not happy, but instead they're going to complain about how they don't pull out the trash or something like, you know, so the 3Ds of deny, distract, dissociate, that is how we cope in daily life. But when we can shut off the 3D world and close our eyes and go inside, that gives us tremendous power to be able to control our experience. And once we do that consistently, we're able to do that with our eyes open.
That's, you know, with you saying that, that actually makes a lot of sense because I've actually noticed that when people are not in like the best like mental state, they find everything like the external world to blame. You know what I mean? But then once you do focus like within you and doing the breath work and meditation, which by the way, I didn't know there were so many different types of meditation. Before I forget, I kind of just want to like just ask like once I'm done with what I'm saying, can I wanted to ask you that question about like so many different types of meditation because I didn't know there were so many different ones and I've talked to a lot of different people about meditation. So I just want to just throw that there because I don't want to like completely forget about it. So what I was saying is that I've actually have been doing this like program with this guy who's actually was one of my guests. He's starting to do a certain pilot program. And his whole idea is to like get rid of the trash in your subconscious. Because once you do that, then it's just like I've been doing that with him and I've just been feeling like actually like not depressed, not just like hating everything. Like I just feel normal. Like it just feels so different than just being able to just like sit and be with yourself and not feel like so anxious where you have to be doing like a million things and just feel like okay. I think just saying like because I have my own trauma, my whole like my own story. I mean that's why I have a mental health podcast and a whole mental health brand. And I just feel so great, you know. Just and I. Also, that every guest I talk to always just has all this like wisdom and things that I learn. And it's just honestly, in my opinion, I feel like it's kind of like better than traditional therapy. But let me go back to the meditation part because I do want to learn more. Because like I said, I do have knowledge about it to an extent, but I had no idea there were so many different types. So we have the breath work. And what were the other ones again?
Oh, Justine.
Or a couple, or just thousands.
There are thousands of different kinds of meditation.
What?
Now, you could categorize them into a few different buckets. And I've read and participated in lots of different meditation programs that do have their own categorization system. The most studied kind of meditation that whenever you read a scientific study, it's typically LKM, loving kindness meditation. About 45% of all the studies that have ever been done on meditation are specific to loving kindness. Mm-hmm. Which is very different from most of the meditative practices that are out there. Loving kindness meditation is very externally focused. You're sitting, but you're sending out loving kindness to these various groups of people in a very methodical way. Whereas the meditation types that I mentioned are very inward focused. You're focusing on your body. You're focusing on your breath. There are some where you stare at a candle or you look at a mandala or you repeat a word in your head. There are manifestation meditations. There are some that allow you to think about expanding your body outside of your body, extending your electromagnetic field. Others that are focused on dropping your body, your consciousness into the ground, essentially. I teach a rainbow breath meditation, which is a combination of body, breath, and mind, where we're actually focusing on the body, using the breath, and visualizing the breath being kind of flossed through the central channel of the body. You can see the chakra chart here. So I refer to this a lot with my clients. You know, I'm really at that intersection of science and spirituality. If you want to talk about the chakras, well, let's talk about the fact that every single one of them, save the root. The root is associated with a different area, but the vast majority of the chakras abut a gland that has to do with your endocrine system. So that's your hormones. That's going to affect how you feel, right? This is the thyroid. The thymus here actually produces your T leukocytes, a very special kind of white blood cell that is your immunity. You've got your pituitary gland, the pineal gland. Obviously, you have the testes and ovaries down here and other glands that are associated with the pancreas in your center of power, as well as digestion. So vibrationally, we know from science has proven that each of these organs actually vibrate at a different frequency. And everything is vibrating. Everything, uh-huh. Even the desk that I'm sitting here at is actually vibrating. You think about this is an expansion and a contraction, right? You see it as a sine wave, mm-hmm. but really it's a spiral. If you take a slinky and you mm-hmm. pull it out, what does it make?
A
frequency,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And we uh-huh. see these frequencies in our heartbeats, in the expansion and contraction of our lungs, mm-hmm. day and night, the tides, the ocean. I mean, everything is expanding and contracting, except the universe itself.
Really?
And to me, well, of course, the Big Bang, right? The universe is expanding.
Okay, yeah.
And to me, the definition of enlightenment is expanding oh. when you want to contract. Because we have these great days and then we have hard days. And those are the contractions. And when we can see the rape, the trauma, the tough day as, oh, this is my opportunity to expand. This is my chance to see this challenge as an opportunity. This is my chance to dance instead of yell and say, I am going to take this lightly. I call it like playing with a beach ball. You can grip a beach ball and really hold it, or you can choose to play with it. And when life throws you something to deal with, you get to decide.
Yeah,
you respond.
That's true. I want to give you an example. I want you to tell me if it correlates to what you were just saying. So I've been taking acting classes and I am just like, I struggle with anxiety. I don't know if you can tell before I clicked record today. That I'm working on, that stems from childhood trauma. But I decided like once I went up there, because I had a commercial thing I had to do, like a Nike commercial. And I was feeling it, like the anxiety. I'm like, you know what? Like, I just took all of that energy and I just decided to take it from being like pushing me down to like just like use the energy to really
momentum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like instead of it going like pushing me down, I was like, come on, it's gonna come out and it's gonna come like, I'm gonna use this energy for a good cause.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, the only difference between nervousness and excitement is your mindset.
Yeah.
The only difference between a panic attack and an orgasm is your mindset.
Really? Can you go more into that? Because the difference of both. And yeah, I'm curious.
Yeah.
I'm very intrigued right now.
Well, in both of those examples we're talking about, we are talking about sympathetic nervous system arousal. So
yeah.
Our sympathetic and parasympathetic, I'm sure you know about that, right?
Yeah.
That it's a seesaw, that it's not like it's going to, they can't both be up. It's a seesaw. Only one is up and the other one is down. Mm-hmm. When we're excited about a game or a shopping spree or something great that happened, that is sympathetic nervous system arousal. When you get off of a roller coaster, your pupils are dilated, your palms are sweaty, your heart is beating, just like if you just got off of a stage and giving a big speech. But it's mm-hmm. all about the mindset. So specific to what I think intrigued you the most, the panic attack and an orgasm.
Yeah, two different things in my head at least.
Well,
which...
when we're in excited states, we tend to breathe in and out of the mouth.
Okay, yeah.
Instead of the nose. And the nose allows us to calm down. The nose produces nitric oxide, which is naturally calming. That's what they give you in the hospital. If you're having a panic attack, they give you nitric oxide. Well, if we just breathe in and out of the nose, that naturally gives us that ability. Now, when we're breathing in and out of the mouth, like in an orgasm or a panic attack, our heart rate is up, we're sweating, our pupils are dilated, we're in severe sympathetic nervous system arousal. It's just that with an orgasm, you feel safe. It's the mentality, right? And with a panic attack, there's something happening here that's causing the body arousal and the breath change. So in my mind, you know, I told you about the three D's of deny, distract, associate in the three world. Well, the antithesis of that is you can use the three levels or three tools for resilience. Mm-hmm. Body, breath, then mind. Why? Because our bodies developed before we ever took a breath. We actually take about a month when we're kids, when we're little kids, to learn how to breathe. And the subconscious mind, as I'm sure you know, takes about 7 or 8 years to develop. But what happens is as adults, we let the mind control the body and the breath. And we need to turn that on its head, which is why meditation is so powerful, because we're giving attention to our bodies. And when we're triggered, we're trying to find out, where is it that I'm feeling that?
Yeah.
What's the sensation like? And then we harness the breath instead of going into that shallow breathing. We intentionally breathe in and out of the nose. We use belly breathing. We then say to ourselves the kind things like, I'm safe, I'm here, I'm listening. And that gives us those tools for resistance when we can be in the body and recognize that whatever future tripping we're doing is based off of past trauma. It's core wounding, right? Like your subconscious trash there. And we're projecting into the future based off of something that's happened in the past. And we're allowing those thoughts, the monkey mind is what the Buddhists call it, to control our current experience. So we get to decide. We get to take back control just by being in the body, harnessing the breath, and then watching the mind with curiosity, like that beach ball.
So for people who struggle with like panic, they say panic disorder and such is what they'll say, I guess, in the, I don't know if that's in the DSM or whatever. But I think I want to ask you advice for people who do have like panic attacks, because I've had two in my whole life. And the first one I had, I swore I woke up in a panic. And all of a sudden I'm just sleeping and I'm just like, I wake up and I feel like I'm like a dying. I couldn't see for a second. I was like pretty much blind for a second. But I think what put me more into a panic was because I do have childhood trauma of like, I have a eye problem since I was born for my right eye. I had a cataract. I currently have glaucoma. So I think just thinking back that was probably the trigger. But like, I guess, what do you have to say for panic attacks that just come out of nowhere? Like, how does that even work with the brains? Like, you could just be like shopping or whatever. And I've heard people can get into like panic attacks. Like for me, I woke up and into a panic attack. Like, I want to see if you like can give me like advice or any about like the brain and how that even like operates like that.
Well, first of all, I'm really sorry that happened to you. That sounds really hard and scary, especially to wake up in that state. Mm-hmm. And were you my client, which we haven't signed anything, I would definitely have a specific series of questions for you. And I think we could get to the root of it rather quickly. However, in general, what happens with, as I'm sure you've been learning with the subconscious mind versus the conscious mind, you know, there are billions of bits of data all around us, billions with a B. It doesn't matter if you're on the top of a mountain or in your bathroom, there's billions of bits of data. And the human brain, and mostly the body, processes around 11 million bits per second. But we're only consciously aware of between 40 and 50 of the 11 million bits per second. So 45 out of the 11 million bits per second we're actually aware of. So I did the math. 96% of reality is being processed by the subconscious. So in answer to your question, the reason why somebody can be in a shopping mall. I won't speak to your specific situation because I haven't, you know, taken.
Yeah, no worries. Just giving. I'm giving you like a general kind of scenario.
Right. Well, it's because there's some subconscious trigger, likely a smell.
That makes sense.
Because the smell, the olfactory, actually connects directly to the brain and isn't processed like the amygdala. Is where we process most of our sensations. Mm-hmm. It comes into the amygdala in the brain and it has a decision, safe or not safe. And if the amygdala says not safe, we go into that state of fight or flight, all the alarm bells are going off. But if the amygdala says safe, now smell is the only thing that bypasses that. It goes straight to your memory center. And so there could be a smell combined with a sight or some sort of a flash that put someone into a panic attack in a shopping mall or something like that. It's a combination of sensory triggers because, right, we're in this body for a reason. And the body actually stores these emotions energetically. If you look at the electromagnetic spectrum, Justine, we see in this tiny little sliver of the electromagnetic spectrum, that's the visible color spectrum. But you know that we don't see Wi-Fi or the garage door opener or any of these other waves. And it would be very confusing if we did see all of these different things. So there are lots of vibrational things that we actually energetically store in the body. And so the work that I do with my clients is to actually keep the body very safe, because when we go into these altered states of consciousness like meditation, we don't have to relive the trauma, but we can figure out probably how old we were and maybe whether or not it was a playground situation or something with our sister or something like that. And then there are memories that maybe we don't access. And there are other therapies that I don't really recommend that I've done myself, which is why I use the modality of meditation. But these other modalities will allow you to relive these traumas. To me, it doesn't really matter exactly what happened. The point is, it's causing problems in our lives. And so we get to look at the problems and make a conscious going down that road of, what am I making it mean that my partner won't, for example, we talked about taking out the trash. Well, we'll go through when I'm working with couples or even individuals. Okay, so because he doesn't take out the trash, what does that mean? And because she does it, and we keep, and finally we get to, they don't care about me, or yeah, I'm going to be broken up with. It's some sense of unworthiness, as you know.
Core beliefs.
We just walk down that road and continue to ask the question until we finally, that's what it is. And it's not about the trash, really, but it is. It's about what we're making it mean, which is all governed by the subconscious. And we're just annoyed by the trash, but really there's some sort of a core wound that's being activated. And if we additionally have a need for cleanliness or have a need for communication and partnership, and that's also not being met, then we go in and actually figure out, what are my daily basic needs and what's the underlying core wound? Because we can reprogram that very, very quickly, even if it's been in there for decades, as I'm sure you're learning in this course that you're taking.
Yeah. So I do have one question for you. When you were talking about, you know, going back to the core wounds and such, when I was in traditional therapy, my therapist says our core beliefs can't, we only learn how to cope, but we can't heal because it's like a concrete. When she said to me, because that's true, Jessica said, that's true. What she said to me, I want to hear your like opinion on that. When she's, because I mean, I know there's a difference between core beliefs and core wounds. So like, okay, the core belief of feeling like unworthy, like that's one of mine, because as a child, I was bullied a lot, like by, like at home, at school. Like that's a huge part of like my story, is just being mistreated, being bullied and such. And so I grew up and I have this feeling of unworthiness. And I think I do a lot with like, you know, confidence, but I feel like those are in a way kind of two separate things to an extent. And I can kind of have an opinion on that. But I think like deep down in me, I have like that core belief, like I'm not good enough or I'm unworthy and such. And my therapist was saying that we learn coping with that, but not like changing. Kind of get where I'm going with this, hopefully.
I think that there are some therapists out there who are doing really good work and helping people with solutions. Mm-hmm. However, I do believe that the vast majority of therapists are basically keeping people in a chair. That's their revenue.
Yeah.
Whereas coaching is very solution oriented and it's a finite period of time, so that, and for me, I'm giving my clients worksheets. Mm-hmm. They the recap of the entire meeting. If they're working with me one-on-one, they have video modules. If they're working with me in a group, and I'm actually giving them the tools so that they don't need me anymore, because my BHAG, my big, hairy, audacious goal in life is to help 28 million people heal from within using the magic of meditation. And I have to move on to someone else. So joy for me is being able to work with somebody for long enough, uh-huh, so that then they are solid on their own. And so I don't want to speak about any particular therapist, but there are some cognitive behavioral therapists are better, but coaching is definitely more forward-facing and solution-oriented, whereas talk therapy has its place.
Yeah.
If you haven't talked about a rape for 15 years and you want to have a safe space to do it, it's a great place to do it. But also you can go to a coach and have that personal support as well. Mm-hmm. And then it's not, because we have, and I'm sure you've learned about the reticular activating system in the brain that's picking up on things in our in our outside environment. And so when we go to therapy and we talk about all of our problems, guess what we get more of?
More problems.
Right. So we want to talk about solutions and what we actually want. I call it the rollerblading octopus. It's like if I say, do not think of an octopus in rollerblades.
I just
even though I said do not, you're trying to put that rollerblade on. How many of the tentacles have roller? You know? So yeah, we want to focus on what we want and focus on where we're going instead of looking in the rearview mirror so much.
You're so right, and it all depends on the individual. Like some people just may need to just have like that person to just listen to, you know, what they're going through. And I feel like everybody is in all different parts of their healing journey. Mm-hmm. And like I said, everyone's different. Like for me, I'm very like solution. Like I'm just like I need to do work. And like that's, I've had so many like therapists in my life. And this is like, you know, I'm very thankful for the last one that I have because it just showed me that I know what I need. And what I need is like a different type of healing, like route, like not your traditional, which is like actually really interesting because my whole, like I have a background in psychology and like that's the route I was, but I didn't become a therapist because I didn't get my master's. But anyway, but back then when I was in college, I didn't know about all of this other stuff. You know what I mean? Like I didn't know other ways of healing. And this is another reason why I love doing this podcast because before I, you know, I got on like the Podmatch and such, I didn't know about all these people with all these different ways of healing. And I mean, I know there's like holistic routes and things like that, but I've learned so much. And I feel like, you know, I've interviewed some people who, oh my goodness, they're like different coaches for different things, but right. I would always bring up something in my life that relates to whatever you guys coach about. And then I'm just like, oh, I feel like I'm just like healing through you guys in a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I didn't even expect it. And like I was telling you before, like I just feel like I'm such like a happier person. And I feel like better. And I'm just, it's just such a beautiful thing. Like, God, I love Podmatch.
Worth the investment, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, yes. I'm always preaching about Podmatch like all the time. But anyway, Podmatch didn't sponsor this, but you guys should definitely start. We talked a lot about, you know, what you do with your clients. We learned about your coaching. Can you tell me more overall about your company?
Absolutely. Pranatova is a healing center that right now is mobile. We use other people's venues, but very soon we will have a brick and mortar venue. I have seen it so many times in my head in meditation, and we are inclusive. So I'm gay, and that doesn't matter because even though I'm a lesbian, this stuff works for anybody. It doesn't matter your sexual orientation, but we do want to be very inclusive. And many people in the queer community do have severe traumas. Mm-hmm. I used to say that either you're in the closet and you're heartbroken or you're out of the closet and you're heartbroken. My own birth parents didn't want to meet my wife, barely spoke with her when they did, and changed the subject when I speak about her. And they always want to talk about me and my daughter, having dinner with me and my daughter. It's like she's not invited, which is really heartbreaking for me. However, I know that there's only two things I can control, and that's what I want to teach people, is that you have control at all times over your body, your breath, and where you place your attention. And Henry Ford said, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. So my company is about making sure that people understand that healing is your birthright and that there are so many different modalities. And we collaborate, we partner with other healers because it's not like my healing has to be the only way. I also use sound healing here locally in St. Petersburg, Florida. And I travel with my sound healing. I speak, and that's how I became a coach, is because I was speaking everywhere and people asked me to coach them after I was speaking. And there are so many different avenues. Meditation is a beautiful one. And usually people need several different modalities. And so Pranatova means beautiful life, basically. Prana is your life force, your breath, and Tova is good or harmonious. So this is about creating harmony in your life. And we start with the breath because that's literally the definition of life.
Yeah.
It's the first thing you do and it's the last thing you do.
Yes.
We can survive for weeks without food, a few days without water, but only a few minutes without our breath. It is our life force. And that's what prana means in Sanskrit. It means life force. And Tova is Hebrew and it's good, kind of like you would say Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays. It's that kind of moniker there. So my company is my passion and I am loving sharing it with the world. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, of course. And when you're talking about the oxygen and the breathing, people always say that if you know how to master your breath work, you can master your life. Because at the end of the day, like, because I noticed that if I go into like with the anxiety and I feel like I'm going into a panic, I'm so self-aware now that I'm like, okay, I need to put all my like skills, all my skills and really focus on my breath. And that's like all I'm going to focus on. Because once you have that, then it brings you back to a state where you're like, okay, like I can handle this. It's just knowing that it's your breath thing in life. So
would you like to do an exercise? Would you be open to that?
Yeah.
And I guess you can cut it out if you want. So then I invite you to just drop into your body and open the soles of your feet and feel the pulsation of Mother Earth. 0.8 hertz of magnetism is pulsating up through wood and wire and concrete and pipes into your feet from Mother. She's literally pulling us toward her with magnetism. So see if you can drink some of that energy up into your legs, all the way to your heart and open your heart. So often when we get stressed, we tend to close through the shoulders, tighten through that heart space, and then relax the jaw and tongue and breathe intentionally in and out of the nose. Feel that alignment to where your feet, your heart, and your head are in the same place. Because when we're stressed, typically we are not in the body. We're not paying attention to the breath and we're letting our mind run away from us. So next time you're feeling stressed, just open up the feet energetically, breathe up through the feet into the heart space, open through your heart space, which is not your literal heart, but behind the sternum, in between the shoulder blades, and then relax the jaw and you'll notice that your shoulders drop and you're able to really think more clearly. So that's my little gift to you. And I encourage you to use it and please email me and let me know how that works for you. That was just something that I customized for you and your audience. It's very simple, very short. Most of my things would require a little bit more time.
You know what that motivates me to do?
What's that?
To go outside and touch grass. Okay, you know beautiful. What they, you know what they say? It's so true. Like being in nature and just being by the water, because we're like meant to be in nature. Like we're not meant to just be like in pollution.
So and true.
And just constant, like, which I wish I was like by a beach looking outside instead of looking at like a busy road. But
my wife and I are heading to the beach for sunset as soon as I get off this call.
Okay. So I have a lighthearted question for you that I like to end with is what's one thing about yourself you're most proud of but rarely share with others?
I'm a horrible dancer, but I do it anyway.
I love that. I love it. Like dance like no one's watching, right?
Two left feet cannot follow the beat. Like if you try to teach me a dance move, I'm going to go to the wrong way. I'm going to use the wrong foot. It's ridiculous.
Two left feet?
I do it anyway. So don't put me on stage in a dance line or anything Aww. Like that. And I can learn like line dancing, stuff like that. That's pretty simple that just repeats over and over again. But otherwise I look like a spaz. I've got like double jointed elbows and yeah, no dancing for this chicken. I look like a chicken.
Okay. So note to self, if I ever meet you, I'm not going to take you out line dancing.
We can do that. That's totally fine.
You like line dancing?
No, but we can do it. Hey, I'll do anything once. And I haven't done that in decades. I did grow up in Louisiana, and there's a lot of ladies
there. It was crazy that I grew up by like New York City, right? So I grew up like urban city girl life. And then when I came down to do a Disney college program, and my roommates took me line dancing. They're from like Louisiana and Texas. It's like, let's go line dancing. I'm like, okay. And everyone's out here doing their thing. And I'm like, I've never done this before. I'm like, I was like not brought up in the country. And I'm like a New York girl trying to do, I'm like, what is this? Like, I really enjoyed it though. Loving it. It's so much fun.
It is fun for sure. Yeah, let's go. Let's plan it.
That I can see us doing that. But hey, if you're ever in your area, I know a line dancing place around here.
You let me know. Let's set it up.
Love that.
Yeah, my wife's from Texas, so she knows that stuff too.
That's awesome. All right, Sarah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on my podcast today, for being so brave and telling your story, and then also like educating me like crazy, because I learned so much from you. And so, yeah, I just want to say thank you so much. And of course, I'm going to put all your information in the description as well.
Thank you for having me.